This is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick Houston, and this is the glorious, white-knuckled, God-fearing, spun-out, and half-turned-over racing story of the one and only Ronnie Thomas.
Ronnie Thomas from nearby Christiansburg, Virginia. You didn't have to tow too far to get into the race, 109 miles per hour. You might think that's a disappointing speed, but Ronnie is one of those guys who struggles with marginal equipment and tries to make every field.
Before we get started, I should probably explain what it's like to interview Ronnie, the 1978 Winston Cup Rookie of the Year. Let's put it this way. It's an experience. Don't get me wrong. It's a good experience, a great one even, but it is an experience. Old Ronnie is a storyteller of the finest order, and it's like he's bursting at the seams to tell them all. Today, in this interview, right now, he'll answer your question and then four or five more that you hadn't even considered before getting around to the next one that's actually on your list. So reach up and give those belts another tug. You're about to get caught up in the tsunami that is a Ronnie Thomas interview. It's the story of a second-generation independent driver who wanted more and who finally found it on weekly short track. It's also the story of an era in which it was possible to bring out a caution on the slot.
In row 19, it's Quack Dwyer and Ronnie Thomas of Christiansburg, Virginia.
Ronnie Thomas grew up in Christiansburg, Virginia, the son of longtime NASCAR independent driver Jabe Thomas. Joe Weatherly had been known as the Clown Prince of NASCAR before a tragic accident claimed his life in early 1963. After that, Jabe took over the role, and he ran with it. If you have any doubts about old Jabe, just consider this clip from Universal Racing Network's broadcast of the 1975 Carolina 500 at Rockingham. After Jabe blew an engine and spun, Ned Jarrett caught up with him in the pits. Poor Ned didn't know what was about to hit him.
Okay, we have a fella here that took a wild ride down the front straightaway here, and if he's going to have trouble, he might as well do it in front of all the people. Jabe Thomas, Christiansburg, Virginia. And Jabe, you look mighty good. You had an armful of steering wheel out there, though.
Well, Ned, you know, we need a little excitement today somewhere when nobody else gonna do nothing. So I say, well, it's maybe I ought to do it. The engine blowed and it just locked the rear wheels up and put me in a spin so quick. I didn't know if it was coming or going. But anyhow, I just wondered if everybody knows what a beautiful job I done of handling that thing. That's the best job I ever seen in my life, because I believe I got on the brakes and locked it down the quickest I ever did.
Well, you got your young son standing along beside you here who's going to be driving in some of those mini stock races this year.
I'm going to see what he does. If he don't do what I want him to do, off comes his head and a slug out of his rear end.
Jabe, we appreciate you coming by. We're sorry that you had that tough luck, but if you had to have it, we're glad it happened right here in front of all the people.
So here we are, and It ain't under the best circumstances we could be talking under, but anyhow, we're talking, ain't we? So I want all of them out there to know that we've thought about them, and hello to all you drunks up there listening at me.
Well, now, I don't believe with any of those out there. Thank you again, Jake, for coming by, and we'll be seeing you later on in the season. Now back to network control.
Jabe finished sixth in the 1971 Winston Cup standings, and in 323 career starts, his best finish was a fourth that same year at New Asheville Speedway. Racing was not the family's sole source of income. Jabe owned an all-day, everyday service station there in Christiansburg, as well as a rental property or two. When it came time for Ronnie to start racing, he was ready to rock and roll. He was raring to go out and win every race on the very first lap. And he didn't particularly care what it took to get him up to speed.
I want him to sell everything he had. I said, I want to sell his house. He had three or four rental houses. I want to sell them. And they had a few thousand savings. I want to take all that out of the bank. And I just, you know, as a kid, I wanted to race. But I didn't want to race like I knew I was going to have to race. And I, to be honest with you, I knew which side, after a little bit, I knew which side my bread was buttered on.
Ronnie began the 1978 Winston Cup season with one race car that had been passed down from Bobby Allison to James Hilton, and then on to Jade. Their open hauler had been purchased from Junior Johnson several years earlier. They eventually got another car from another struggling independent driver by the name of Richard Childress. And with that, they went for it. Ronnie was throwing his helmet in the ring for the 1978 Winston Cup Rookie of the Year title.
We honestly should not have won Rookie of the Year. There was 20 people in 1978 started running for Rookie of the Year. Roland Velotica, Chuck Baum, Roger Hamby. I mean, there was some pretty cotton-picking big names in there. And my dad said, we can't outrun these guys. We got to try to outsmart them.
Ronnie ran 27 of the season's 30 races with two top 10 finishes, a 10th at Nashville and a 9th at Darlington. Ronnie was able to edge Roger Hamby for the freshman title by 2 points. Ronnie collected a $10,000 bonus, plus $1,000 more in each of the races he ran the following season. Those running with even a shoestring budget were extravagant spenders compared to Ronnie and Jabe.
We just ran, did the best we could, and what happened? 2/3 of them run out of money. Yeah. We spent $70,000+ in one Rookie of the Year.
Success was hard to come by, but do not think for a second that he was just another also-ran. People noticed his raw, if untapped, talent, and they were important people. Junior Johnson said in the October 8th, 1981 issue of Grand National Scene, I'll tell you one thing. If I had the capability of fielding a second car right now and could put any driver in it, I'd put Ronnie Thomas behind the wheel. He's got all the skills and the natural instinct I look for in a driver. If he were in a competitive car right now, he'd be winning races. Coming from a hardcore, old-school, former moonshiner like Junior, praise just didn't get any better than that. Ronnie found himself in the catch-22 of all catch-22s. He knew he could drive a race car, but he desperately needed funding in order to prove it. Once upon a time in the wonderful world of big-time auto racing, there was a give and take amongst teams in the garage. Bigger teams would help smaller ones out by either selling them used cheap parts and equipment or giving it to them outright. Some smaller teams would return the favor by helping bigger ones any way they could. That sometimes included bringing out a caution at just the right time. And yes, Ronnie Thomas just so happened to be one of those drivers.
We know of a couple people did it. I mean, when people show up with certain people's trucks and trailers and 2 or 3 weeks after things happen, you kind of, you know, they can say it's bought, but you can figure it out. But yeah, did I do it a dozen times? No, but I did it several times. You know, I did it in Daytona, did it in Martinsville.
Ronnie remembers one incident in particular, but he does not name names.
Here's the thing. I have been told by many people, don't mention the names because, you know, they've won championships. So if I mention the names, it kind of puts a tarnish on their championship. But I will tell you, one guy, big name, it's three big names in racing, but this one particular one, he won a championship in the, I'll just say early to mid-80s. It could be several different people, but he got hurt. And it's kind of funny is James Hilton had the deal. James missed a race at Martinsville. He comes to me and he said, you want to make some money? I said, how's that? He said, bring out a caution flag early so we can get this guy in the car and put the relief driver in it. and he was up near the front in the points. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, $1,000. Well, heck, I had finished like 12th to get $1,000. And so I talked to the, and this guy, you see him all the time now. He's a very big name crew chief, one of the bigger ones. He come, I go over and talk to him at the corner of the trailer, and I said, what's the deal here? And he said, I'll give you $1,000. I need early caution. And I said, well, all I can tell you is one thing, tell him you don't have to tighten your seatbelts up.
And sure enough, right there in the online rundown for the fall race at Martinsville in 1984, caution, lap 3, 41 car. That was Ronnie.
They dropped the flag. I go down in the corner, and I just locked the brakes up going in the first corner. I was running about 50 miles an hour when I spun around backwards. And I'm sitting backwards. And I can't remember if Oscar Bowman or Dole Ford was flagging, but I'm backwards in the first corner. They don't throw the flag out. Here they come out of the fourth corner. I said, I ain't freaking moving. They got almost start finish line, and hey, waves of caution. I started up. I spin around. I catch up to tail end the field. And of course, you get the $1,000 the next week.
That was all well and good, and he did get paid the following week. But he also got an invitation to the NASCAR hauler for a little chat with Winston Cup director Dick Beatty. Ronnie had his alibi ready to roll.
Where we went the next week, I get my money. I said, Ronnie Thomas, come to the NASCAR trailer. Dick Beatty.
You've been fined $1,001.
No. I didn't get fined. I didn't get fined anything because they couldn't prove anything. Go in a trailer. Here's a deal with Dick. He always called me Ronnie, but if he was mad about something, he'd say, son, I never could figure it out. So I go to the trailer and said, shut the door and sit down. He may have a little like couch in there. Shut the door, sit down, son. I said, oh, crap. I knew it was bad. I said, I got to ask you something. I said, why'd you spin out of Martinsville last week? I just spun out. But why? The race starts, you go down in the corner and spin around. I said, Dick, I had old tires on. And you all know, people know now, we borrowed tires to qualify on. But when we started a race, we put our old tires on from a race or two before and had laps on. I said, I had those old tires on, and they were hard. They were hard, but wasn't that hard. So I said, I hit the brakes and spun around backwards. And I said, I was just running so fast when I went down with them hard tires. He said, you don't run fast enough to spin out.
Some deals were struck before a race. At other times, he got coded messages during events to tell him that somebody needed a yellow flag.
Hey, Ronnie, check that oil pressure. Ronnie, how about you check that water temperature for me?
On at least one occasion, a mid-race deal got done with Junior Johnson.
If I'd been running top 10 or top 15, I wouldn't have done it. We run, you know, when you run crappy enough, what's making a difference? So we got out there, and we get out there, and they give me the thing, you know, a little cue, and I said, okay. I throw the thing out of gear halfway down the backstretch. Well, I get to fourth turn, I'm like, God darn, I'm still running 90 miles an hour. I'm getting ready to go on pit road. I said, darn, I got to get slow. So I'm trying to slow down with the brakes, not let the car pitch forward. And I get slowed up, I stop at pit road entrance. So, of course, I stop, they throw the caution flag out, truck pushes me, and we go down pit road, and Marshall raises the hood and acts, he's looking around, looking inside the car. Got it, and I take back out.
This time, payment didn't come in the form of cash money. Instead, Ronnie got to pick up parts and pieces for his race car. For a struggling independent driver, it was just part of doing business and trying to get from one race to the next.
Junior didn't want too much on giving money. He liked to give parts, and you can't blame him. You know, Chevrolet was giving him stuff and all this, and I'd go down there, and instead of giving me money, he'd give me, you know, set of used heads and set of 180-degree headers and stuff like that.
Ronnie attempted to qualify for the majority of races through the 1984 season,
From 1985 until the end of the decade, he made just a handful of attempts each year. The June 1989 event at Michigan turned out to be the final Winston Cup race of his career. A DNQ at Charlotte was the turning point. He had to do something else and go in another direction.
I was sitting in the car. I didn't even get out of it. And I was sitting there and I was upset. And I said, I just cannot keep doing this. I said, man, it is friggin' hurtful. It's embarrassing. And I said, I just am not, can't keep doing this.
Ronnie turned his attention to running late model stocks in and around his native Virginia. This was an entirely new ballgame. After years of running at the back of the Winston Cup pack, it was Ronnie who was now the hot dog at the front of the field, winning race after race. He was a big fish in a smaller pond, but that was okay by him.
I got to actually winning so much. I mean, everywhere we go, if we won winning, we were competitive. Next thing I know, I've got fans in the stands giving me the finger, cussing me. And I'm like, man, everybody used to like me. But then that's when I realized, you talk about Waltrip and Kale and all these people booing. It made me realize it don't matter what division you're in, people don't like somebody to win too much. But I'm going to tell you, the fingering and the booing, I loved it.
All these years later, he's reaping the benefits of listening to Jabe. Turns out, the old man knew what he was talking about after all.
He told me about 84, he said, if you will hang with me, listen to me, you can live a pretty comfortable life. That don't mean, you know, no rich cat, you know, live a jet set life, but I'm now where he told me 30 years ago, said, you listen to me, things will be good for you in life. And right now, I'm very blessed.
Ronnie still lives in Christiansburg in a comfortable middle-class home. He's fully restored one of his old race cars and an open hauler, and he enjoys taking them both to shows and various racing old-timers events. He has also put together one of the finest racing memorabilia collections this side of the NASCAR Hall of Fame and Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s Bojangles Dirty Mo Studio. Now, Ronnie, about that Richard Petty helmet, call me. Let's do some trading. This has been the story of Ronnie Thomas, a glorious, white-knuckled, God-fearing, spun-out, and half-turned-over race car driver, if ever there was one. Go listen and follow the glorious white-knuckled, God-fearing, spun-out, and half-turned-over Racing Stories podcast now. Available on DirtyMoMedia.com and all major podcast platforms. Glorious Racing Stories is a production of Dirty Mo Media, hosted by me, Rick Houston. This show is produced by Andrew Kurland. Executive producers Mike Davis and Jason Schultz. Artwork is by Sean Sin. Special thanks to Leah Vaughn. Broadcast audio is credited to CBS and ABC.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Dirty Mo.